Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett to break down WWE SmackDown for November the 18th, 2011, the go-home show final hype for Survivor Series. And just a quick plug before we get started on the show, Jason Powell and I will be back with you Sunday night for double-team action on Survivor Series, both of us covering the show for you live right here on ProWrestling.net. And then, of course, afterwards, another audio review, complete breakdown of the show from start to finish. That show, however, will be a members-exclusive audio, so if it's something you would like to hear, then head on over to ProWrestling.net. Get signed up for the members pass. $7.50 a month gets you started. $5.50 a month if you want to take in the annual option. Save you $2 a month. And you get access to that audio Sunday night, plus all the audio we do each week. Dixon Powell and I each do a Q&A audio. We do a breakdown of Monday Night Raw, Friday Night SmackDown, and TNA Impact Wrestling on Thursday night. Jake Barnett and Will Pruitt are along on Wednesdays to do the .NET Countdown, where they look at the top and the bottom in professional wrestling across all of wrestling for that week. And then on Thursdays, Jason Powell and I get together for .NET Weekly, our flagship audio show. We run down the news of the week, such as it is. This week was a rough week, not a lot going on. We had a few things to talk about, and we always talk about what's going on that week in wrestling, and sometimes, a lot of times actually, we have first-run news stuff that's not even made it to the site yet. So you get access to all of that. You'll be able to read about Survivor Series on the ad-free version of the site, talk about it with other members on the .NET forum, and even blog your thoughts about it in the .NET members blog section. So a lot of stuff for you for signing up. Just head over to ProWrestling.net. Look on the right-hand side of the page for the .NET member sign-up page. That'll get you started, and you can join us here Sunday night for live coverage of Survivor Series. And so, Jake, we will start right there with this November 18th edition of SmackDown. It was taped on November the 15th in Bridgeport, Connecticut. They spent a lot of time comparing the distance there to New York City and putting over that Survivor Series will be at Madison Square Garden this weekend. Of course, headlined by The Rock and John Cena. This was WWE's final chance to give us a reason to buy the show, and so I will ask you, were you planning on buying the show before? Obviously, the job notwithstanding, were you, as a fan, would you be buying the show before? If not, would you after seeing this SmackDown? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about Survivor Series?
Well, I mean, I think I was probably leaning towards buying the pay-per-view. Just as it was. I mean, I do want to see The Rock's return, you know, after 7 years. I think it'll be a fun show just to see him back in the ring. And I've been really entertained by what, Mark Henry's been doing recently. And the Big Show has done an admirable job of pulling up his end of the bargain, too. So based on those two matches alone, I think the pay-per-view is probably, worth a purchase. And they've added some decent, if not always compelling stuff to fill out the rest of the card that we know will at least be, satisfying action in the ring. So as far as, if you want to give it a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably say I'm at a 7 for ordering the show. And tonight's show, while it wasn't, spectacular from start to finish, did have some bright spots. So I was definitely more intrigued about the show than I was, when we first started the show tonight. So I thought it was a success, if not a complete success. I mean, there are definitely some dull spots on the show, but overall, I thought it was a pretty good effort from a lot of people.
Yeah, I hate to say this. It's a good thing that SmackDown is the Friday night show and not Raw, because I was at a 3 on a 10. We talked about this yesterday in .NET Weekly. Jason and I did, and he was at a 2 coming out of Raw. I mean, it was bad coming out of Raw. Nothing felt special. Nothing felt important. And Mark Henry and Big Show flat came out tonight. Big Show had one big major error in the middle, and we'll talk about it when we get there. But, other than that, Big Show and Mark Henry feud right now is the best thing in all of wrestling television right now. Something tomorrow may bubble up and overtake it, but if you ask me today what's my favorite angle in all the wrestling that I watch several hours every week, it's this. This is what makes me want to see this pay-per-view. And I'm probably up around a 5 or a 6 now. I'm kind of middle of the road about excitement for seeing this card on Sunday. And I think it's strange that Not strange. I'm not the only person who was unimpressed with The Rock on Monday night. And quickly, I'll just go ahead and ask you. Jason and I have talked about this already in .NET Weekly, so I won't, you know, repeat everything here. But what, you know, did you think that it was an effective use of The Rock on Monday night? And you know, does that match seem intriguing at all? The Rock, of course.
Yeah, I mean, the spectacle of The Rock is probably enough to sell the show, you know, for me, you know, just because I've been a huge fan of his for quite a long time, and I think he's, you know, judging by how well he's gotten back into ring shape and, you know, how pumped he seemed to be on the show, you know, I think that's enough for most people, probably including me. But, I mean, you know, from a storyline perspective, if you want to analyze what they've been doing, I mean, it definitely hasn't been a very good sell. I mean, they're definitely counting on The Rock selling the show, and I think, you know, he did okay with the material he was given. I mean, it wasn't a spectacular, you know, way to book his return, but, you know, he did what he could with it, and he was entertaining, and he had a hold of the crowd, and, you know, he's got enough charisma to carry, you know, mediocre material into the good category, but I don't think it was the best use of him on Monday's show.
I really feel like this pay-per-view was built around, the marketing for this pay-per-view was built around this single sentence. It's The Rock. You know, you're going to buy it. Screw you. I mean, honestly, that's what it feels like. And to some degree, that's fair. I mean, it's the first half of that sentence, it's The Rock, you know you're going to buy it, is pretty accurate. I mean, like you said, the spectacle of The Rock itself is going to do 99.9% of the sales that this pay-per-view is going to do. I mean, that can be directly attributed to just, it's The Rock. But to me, it's not so much that as it is, they've taken it for granted, and nothing else has had any attention put on it. Even the two world title feud, I think we're getting a very good one on SmackDown, and I think Mark Henry is doing, I mean, he's got good material. I don't make it sound like he's turning, you know, chicken crap into chicken salad. He's not. He's got decent material to work with, but he is just really performing at a crazy level right now. Del Rio and Punk are guys that we have both been high on at different times since they showed up in WWE, and he's a guy just feels very exciting right now. I mean, I'm not looking forward to that match in any significant way. I think it could be a very, very good match. I think we have to watch out for them stealing the show going on right before what's going to be a questionable work rate, I think, in that tag team main event, just because it's not going to be about the work rate. It's going to be about what happens with Cena and Rock. So, I'm so in between on Survivor Series. I think it's got the potential to be very, very good. It's something that people talk about for a long time. I think it also has the potential to be a big landmine for them. If The Rock is there and they get a ton of eyeballs on their product and they produce the same garbage they've been producing for some time now, I think WWE can be hurt by this. I just want to ask you a question on that and see what you think. Do you think it's possible that they can do damage to themselves here where, like I said, where you have more people than normal watching, and what there is just, well, to kind of quote Rock from Monday night, hot garbage. You know, you're still going to get that great moment with The Rock, but everything else around that pay-per-view could be just putrid.
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. I mean, to be fair, I mean, Mark Henry's feud, you know, if, you know, being a guy who, you know, cover SmackDown and editorialize SmackDown on a weekly basis. I mean, I think they've, you know, if you're looking for something other than the spectacle of The Rock to sell the show, you have to look at, you know, what Henry has been doing. You know, he's the only real heel in WWE. But, I mean, you have every right to be of two minds about the show. I mean, outside of, you know, Henry and the spectacle of The Rock returning, they really haven't given us much from a booking standpoint to really get excited about. Now, you know, and, you know, it is a Survivor Series pay-per-view, and it is still $60 in HD. So, I mean, if you were going to be completely objective about it and mark down, you know, how much money each feud was worth to you, I mean, if you didn't come up with $50 between The Rock and Mark Henry, I don't know where you find the rest of your money on the show. I mean, it just hasn't been booked that way, so. You're right. I mean, if it goes poorly and it's executed poorly, it could damage, you know, the potential of The Rock and Cena at WrestleMania. But, you know, I think that's slim to none. I don't think there's anything that is going to deter wrestling fans, you know, whatever segment of this market you come from buying the show. I mean, WrestleMania is the spectacle in and of itself, and I think, you know, The Rock and Cena having their face-off is a pretty safe bet, even if, you know, this pay-per-view doesn't go off as well as they think it will.
Last Survivor Series Survivor Series question before we break down the show. Every match tonight, save for the Divas match, some tearing up of what will be the traditional Survivor Series match at the pay-per-view, Team Orton versus Team Barrett. They had, I believe it was 5 matches total for the men, where they kind of teamed those guys up in various formations to have matches tonight, and that was pretty much the theme of the show, was trying to get that match over. What do you think about this match heading into the pay-per-view? Do you think it's something that the guys in it can get some lift out of? And do you think they've done a good enough job of selling this? I made a point in my report of saying that, you know, there was no real logic in putting these teams together. They were just kind of thrown together. So it seems odd at this point how they're trying to almost force us, kind of shoehorn some stories in to build heat. And it's like, okay, the match itself should just be able enough to get itself over, because there's not enough time left to actually build feuds within this, other than the ones that are kind of already existing, like Sin Cara and Unico, for example. So let's go back to my original question. I rambled on for a second there. Do you think they've done that? This is a match you're looking forward to, the traditional Survivor Series match. Do you think it'll be a good match, and can the guys coming out of it get some lift?
Well, I mean, it really depends on how it's booked at the pay-per-view. I think there's a lot of promise there. I mean, I thought, you know, Unico showed a lot of promise in the ring tonight. Sin Cara looks more comfortable than, you know, I think we've seen him in the past in the ring. You know, he had a pretty solid technical match with Dolph Ziggler tonight. So, you know, despite the fact that it's kind of been, you know, just shoehorned in there, like you said. I mean, they're kind of random in nature as far as the way the teams have been put together. Depending on the performances they put on Sunday, I think, you know, they could see a boost from this match. You know, if one of the young faces ends up putting on a pretty decent performance against Barrett or you know, Rhodes or somebody, you know, they could see a boost. And you know, if people get to rub up against Sheamus and Orton favorably, they could see a boost on the heel side. So, I think it completely depends on performance on Sunday. I mean, if we see another babyface steamroll like we saw tonight to close the show, you know, I don't know what anybody thinks from this match, if anything.
All right, well, let's go through the show then and see what we think. Again, this was taped on November the 15th in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Show opened cold. We had Mark Henry just beating the crap out of Daniel Bryan backstage. He bounced him around all over the place, choked him out, dragged him to the ring, rolled him in the ring. And not long after they got in the ring, or as Henry climbed in the ring, Bryan found some life, managed to hit a couple of kicks on Henry until Henry just grabbed his foot and shoved him down. He hit the big elbow drop, world's strongest slam. It was just a killing for probably the first 4 minutes of the show. Ref came out, rolled him out to the floor, rolled Bryan out to the floor, telling Henry to back up and checking on Daniel Bryan. Henry takes a mic and cuts a promo. He said that man right there, pointed at Daniel Bryan. He goes, that man's feeling pain, and believe me, there's more where that came from. His Big Show has felt the pain, but apparently he hadn't done a good enough job because Show wanted some more. He said that one of them was getting carried out at Survivor Series, but it wouldn't be him. He said he would be walking out the World Heavyweight Champion, and then he just walked to the back. The beating was perfect. Daniel Bryan made him look like a complete monster. I mean, which he is, but Daniel Bryan so perfectly here. And Henry's promo was just great. It's the second time now I've seen those guys together. The other backstage promo that they did, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then this. I mean, I was breathless after it was done. It was the most exciting opening to a show I'd seen in a long time. And Henry is the best heel in wrestling right now because he does this. Imagine what all the other heels could look like if they let them act like Henry has.
Yeah, he's been the rare exception, and I think, you know, his size plays into that exception perfectly. I mean, I think if you're going to have a heel that is as dominant as Henry has, that I don't think Vince would go for it being, you know, anybody but somebody who's a megastar or somebody who has the size to pull it off. And I think, you know, Henry had the size, and maybe now he's moving into that role where he's going to be the star. So, you know, his part in this was excellent, as, you know, we would come to expect from somebody who has put on the performances of his caliber lately. And Brian went out there and made a great case for himself. I mean, you know, if you want to build somebody up as the David to Henry's Goliath, you know, he's going to have to be able to sell. And you know, I think Brian, you know, sold that beating about as well, you know, as anybody in WWE could at this point. You know, him and Ziggler are probably the two guys you go out there and say, you know, well, these guys have both facets of best to their game down. I mean, they have some flashy offense at times, and, you know, then they sell excellently. So I thought this segment went off especially well, and, you know, Henry's promo has been, you know, consistent for what he's been delivering lately. It's been intense. You know, he's delivered the lines well. You know, and when it was over, you know, you were impressed by it. And that's been pretty much his MO as of the last 4 months.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this show and comparing it to Monday Night Show and just how different I felt at the end of the show as opposed to compared to the end of the Monday Night Show. And I think a lot of it is says a lot about beginnings of the show. You know, the Monday Night Show opened with the Michael Cole challenge with Jim Ross and all that garbage, and it was all corny and groan-inducing and, oh, look, he's fat, yeah, you know, and all of that. It soured the mood, where this was exciting. It felt fresh. Both guys performed. I mean, this is, you know, if I'm grading, this is 100%, not even counting a curve. This is exactly what you hope for. If I'm producing this, I'm backstage, you know, looking for everybody I can find to high five. So it just came across absolutely flawless. And you know, I really, and when you see how this plays out the rest of the show, I am more convinced than ever that we're going to get that David versus Goliath match at WrestleMania. That's where they're sowing the seeds for that now. If it does happen, it's going to be, you know, for me as a journalist, for someone, and I know for you, for as guys who, you know, say you've got to start booking long term, you know, if this turns out like I think it will, if they actually go, you know, pull the trigger here and go through this right, then, you know, when that feud plays out at WrestleMania, then I think there's going to be a certain amount of vindication, because we're going to say, look, they were doing this back in November. Here it is, April. It's been, you know, 5-6 months later. And look at how great this moment is right here at WrestleMania when this happens. You know, if they go that route, it's going to just prove that, you know, if you take a moment and book long term, you can have fantastic stories play out. Exactly when you want them to play out, of course, barring injury.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're definitely building up the video bank, you know, for the typical intense, you know, well done WWE video packages. I mean, what they've done over the last 3 weeks, you know, with Brian and Henry, you know, is going to be part of, you know, one hell of a package if they ever go down that road. You know, all they have to do is, you know, have a couple of weeks where Brian gets a glimmer of hope, and they can sell, you know, one hell of a pay-per-view match. You know, and they already have the built-in, you know, stuff with, you know, with Henry's run being, you know, the monster that he is, and Brian being the plucky guy that captured Money in the Bank. And, you know, so, I mean, they have all the right pieces in place to do this if they want to. And, you know, I don't, you know, given the way that these guys have performed together the past couple of weeks, I don't have any reason to doubt that they can deliver. So it seems ready-made for a WrestleMania main event, and I think it could be, you know, a really special moment when we get there. So, you know, I was impressed with this segment, just like I've been impressed with what they've been doing the past couple of weeks, and I'm very optimistic about what they can do, you know, heading towards Mania in April.
They replayed the beatdown, actually, just kind of the whole thing. They had all the high spots out of it a couple of times, and even the replays made for great TV. Takara made his ring entrance before the commercial break. Afterwards, Vicky Guerrero introduced his opponent, Dolph Ziggler, and also announced that Dolph would be pulling double duty at Survivor Series. It was announced on WWE.com earlier. I think it was on Wednesday that Ziggler will be facing John Morrison for the United States Championship at Survivor Series, even though we have at least 15,000 signatures for Zack Ryder's U.S. title shot. His Twitter petition has over 15,000 signatures, and the story on WWE.com was really bizarre about how Morrison had one win and that was good enough to give him a U.S. title shot. That, you know, Ryder needs to be more impressive or whatever. Quickly, because I'm curious for your thoughts on this. Ryder worked, correction, Ziggler worked double duty at the last pay-per-view. He's doing it again at this pay-per-view with the Survivor Series match because of Christian's injury and, of course, now the U.S. title match. Are you okay with him doing double duty again?
Yeah, I mean, it can quickly get overused as a method of, you know, getting the guy over as an Iron Man. But for now, I mean, I don't think they've abused it to the point of you know, nausea at this point. But, you know, it definitely, you know, he's filling the, you know, the backup role, the Christian in the tag match, and, you know, otherwise he probably would have had some kind of U.S. title match. So, I mean, I'm willing to give him a pass at this point, but if they keep finding ways to put him on a pay-per-view two or three times, it could get, a little irritating. But for now, I think it's fine.
Well, he wrestled tonight only one time. His first match of the night, Dolph Ziggler, Vicky Guerrero, defeating Sin Cara at 4:10. Pretty good match here. Finish on this came with Sin Cara going for a roll-up, and Ziggler just kind of rolled through and flipped Sin Cara back over and hooked the same roll-up for the pinfall victory, kind of a surprise. Sin Cara attacked Ziggler after the match and then had him down in the corner, was beating him down. Jack Swagger ran out, clotheslined Sin Cara, beat him up a little bit, allowed Ziggler to recover, and then Swagger picked up Sin Cara in a wheelbarrow-type lift and allowed Ziggler to hit a famouser on him. They celebrated. Mason Ryan's music hit. He stormed out to the ring. Somehow Swagger made it to the floor, but not Ziggler. And Ziggler turned around and made a clothesline or a boot. I can't remember exactly what it was from Mason Ryan. And then Swagger was on the floor, and those two guys were eyeballing each other, and we went straight to a hard commercial from there. It was a 4-minute match. It was an okay match. They didn't do a whole lot, but it wasn't terrible either. I thought the Sin Cara looked more comfortable than he's looked in some time in the WWE ring. He's getting a little bit more smoother each and every week, it seems to me. And, Ziggler just makes everybody look like $1 million. He's probably, outside of Mark Henry, he's probably my favorite wrestler right now, especially my favorite worker, hands down, is him right now. It was a decent match. Again, its whole purpose here is to sell the traditional Survivor Series 5-on-5 match, and, it, as much as anything else to deny, it did that fine.
Yeah, I mean, they had some, pretty flashy offense. I mean, it was an entertaining match. It wasn't, plodding or, slow-paced, so where you were kind of, your eyes were wandering to other things. But, there wasn't a whole lot of story here. It was just kind of thrown together because they're both a part of this tag match. But, it was entertaining for what it was. And, Ziggler gets the win here like, you would expect because he's definitely in need of any momentum that he can grab since he's been taking losses recently. But, I thought Sin Cara looked fairly good here. He didn't look, bad in defeat. They're both kind of equals at this point. So there's not a whole lot to say other than, it was entertaining and there was no story. So you just have to kind of accept it for what it was.
Back from commercial, we were already in progress for our second match of the night. That ended up being Mason Ryan defeating Jack Swagger with Vicky Guerrero in about 6 minutes. That's a rough time. They had about 4 minutes of time after they came, from the time when we came back live till the match was over, roughly 4 minutes. Ryan got in. I mean, it was mostly a Ryan squash to some degree. Swagger got in a little bit of offense. The finish on it was he went for his full Nelson slam. Swagger escaped for a moment, looked like he was going for the gut wrench powerbomb, but Ryan managed to slip back behind him again and put on what we basically call the master lock slam. He whips people around in the full Nelson like it's the master lock and then finishes up with a big slam at the end for the pinfall victory. More than anything else for me, this was just kind of a sleepy match. It came back on. It was already in progress. You expected them to have a match, but it being in progress was kind of starving a little bit. And you're like, oh, okay, they're already wrestling. And then they just didn't give us a whole lot. I think we had two really long ref holds in that 4 minutes we got after the break. So not very impressive work. I put most of that blame onto Mason Ryan because he's just big and oafish. And, because we've seen that Swagger can work in the ring. And so I think you have to just put this at Mason Ryan's feet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for a six-minute match, Swagger put in about 45 minutes of work trying to get Mason Ryan around that ring. I mean, it looked like a hell of an effort from Swagger's part, but, Ryan is just so limited. You know, I don't know if it's a cardio issue necessarily. I mean, I think it's just, you know, he's way overbuilt for his frame, and it's difficult for him to get around the ring, you know, in any kind of speedy fashion. But, his offense at least wasn't, botched. I mean, they just worked a pretty slow pace, and it wasn't, there wasn't any storyline involved. It was almost, if the last match was, was saved, by its work rate, this match also lacked a story and didn't have the work rate to save it. So it was just kind of a, failure in both regards. So I there wasn't a whole lot to get invested in here. It was just kind of a sleepy kind of affair.
Yep. And again, with an attempt to put heat on the 5-on-5 match of Survivor Series, I mean, this was the biggest failure of the night in that situation. But I don't think it hurt it in any way. As you said, it was what it was. But we got through it and got to the end, and okay, no real harm done. And Mason Ryan just needs to shrink a little bit. I mean, I understand that people like that look, but he's just too big. He does not seem comfortable with his own body in the ring. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think necessarily that he isn't trained properly. I mean, he's not sloppy or anything in the ring like a lot of overbuilt guys are.
Yeah.
But, he just can't put on a pace that's exciting to watch. I mean, if he was against a smaller guy who could mask, a lot of his shortcomings, I'm sure, he could put on a somewhat entertaining match. But, you put him out there with somebody like Swagger who has some size, who also requires, somebody else to do most of the, the heavy lifting as far as pace is concerned. It's just not going to be a formula. It's going to be a winner. It's rare to see two big guys, go out there and put a match on that's a pace that people can get involved in. I mean, we saw Henry and Big Show do it at the last pay-per-view, but that was the last time I remember, really being entertained by, a big man match.
Yeah, he works stiff, and I don't mean that as any hits hard or, clotheslines or whatever. He's just a stiff guy. He just has stiff movements is what strikes me. We got backstage. Alicia Fox and Justin Gabriel were standing there flirting with each other. Zack Ryder walked up and asked them to sign his petition. They were doing it. When Big Show walked up and took the phone away, he did the woo-woo-woo, gimmick, and started signing the petition. Zack Ryder took off his glasses, looked very serious. Show finished signing the petition and asked, he goes, was it something I said? Ryder kind of explained what happened, said that that Mark Henry had beaten up Daniel Bryan, and that he said it was to send a message to Show. Show looked really upset, kind of pissed off, kind of upset all at the same time, and then stormed off into the commercial. I thought this was a fair segment. The stuff with the Twitter, with the Twitch they've been doing for both shows, and kind of getting all the lower card guys definitely be signing the petition to help, I guess, the king of the nerds to some degree, as far as Vince probably sees him, Zack Ryder. So that was fine. And I thought that Big Show did a good job here of the story that they started to tell here and continued on the rest of the show about, Show feeling responsible for what happened to Brian.
Yeah, I mean the only bit that you could say wasn't entertaining comes later. So I thought everything here was fairly well done. It wasn't any heavy hitting as far as storytelling is concerned. I mean, it was just serviceable, but there wasn't anything that was particularly bad about it. It fit in with the story they were telling tonight, and it got everybody that was involved, onto TV, and they didn't do anything to embarrass themselves. So, overall, it was a good segment.
Yep. Big Show was so awful and corny. thing. And he even has kind of a corny moment later on, like which we'll all talk about. But he so often comes across corny that it was very nice to see him do something that could be taken seriously without having to stretch your disbelief too far. He did a very good job here of doing what was expected of him without it coming across as really cheesy, which seems to happen to him a lot. After the commercial break, Ted DiBiase and Hornswoggle were backstage playing WWE 12. And I wrote my report, just go with it, don't ask me why, it's just because. Teddy Long walks up and congratulated Ted on his recent wins and the DiBiase posse parties that he's been having. DiBiase started to explain some about what they were doing with those posse parties when, speaking of posse, the lights turned purple and we had the horn sax music and in walks Oksana. She starts talking to Teddy Long, and Teddy Long dismisses Ted DiBiase and Hornswoggle. DiBiase was really kind of over the top with his, how was he? And he's, oh, okay, yeah. When Teddy said, I believe she was talking to me, he's like, right. And he and Hornswoggle left. I thought it was really poorly done on Ted's part, but not the biggest sin necessarily in the segment. Oksana, laid it on real thick about wanting someone to teach her how to play the WWE 12 video game. Because she was a big gamer. She wasn't when she was younger, but as she got older, she learned how to handle a joystick great. Teddy Long said, I bet you did. He said he'd meet her back there later, and they would play together. She said that was great, gave him a little kiss on the cheek, and walked off. Teddy grabbed his heart, kind of patted his chest, and said, okay, Teddy, calm down, don't have another heart attack. I wanted to have a heart attack here. I kept hoping in the middle of it I would have a heart attack. The joystick joke was, you could see it coming as soon as she walked up. It's like, wait, they're playing video games. Oh, God dang it, there's going to be a joystick joke. And there it was. I guess the only thing that I can look at this, or the one thing I can look at this and start jumping up and down a little bit over is that he started grabbing for his heart and hinting back to that time he had the heart attack before. I hope that that's a key that we're coming to the end of this ignorant-ass segment that happens randomly backstage. Not even every week in a row. Sometimes they won't even do it for 3 weeks, and then they'll do it again. Please tell me this is almost over.
I wish I had an answer for you. It doesn't even seem like it has a planned conclusion in mind. It's just there. And they're kind of doing that randomly with the women for some reason right now. Alicia Fox is backstage kind of throwing herself at Dustin Gabriel. And, AJ was, showing great concern about Daniel Bryan. And then you have Oksana, repeatedly kind of throwing herself at Teddy Long with these awful, foreign language, they're trying to kind of do some kind of lost in translation thing with her language euphemisms and whatnot. So, it seems like the only way they can find to get some of these women on TV is just to have them throw themselves at some random male wrestler. But, I can't tell you when this is going to end. It just seems to be what they're doing with the females not involved with Beth Phoenix at the moment.
Yeah, I really want them to get to the end of this, whatever it is. I imagine how this came to be is somebody went and bought a joke book at Barnes & Noble in the juvenile section with, like you said, the lost in translation like euphemisms. And they've got this book of like 500 double entendre jokes that they're trying to work in before the end of the year on SmackDown. That's just how it seems for me every time they have this segment with Teddy Long and Oksana. I still wanted to say Moose and Squirrel. Just one time give me a Moose and Squirrel and I'll back off of my criticisms. Chris's music hit at that point. He hobbled out onto the ramp. He was wearing a neck brace. He had a walking boot on and a crutch. And a promo being injured, blamed it on Teddy Long, said that he had been chokeslammed by the Big Show, and that he had to go out and work Sheamus after that, even though his neck was hurt. He put himself over as being a man very intensely, something we haven't seen from Christian in some time. The crowd really got into booing him at that point. He got good heat when he was screaming out being a man and said that, he had to work hurt. Now he was hurt worse because of it. He said he would, normally that would be where he would, this would be the moment in the show where he would come out asking for one more match, one more title match, but now he was just hoping that he was going to have one more match, period. He said that he was ashamed of the fans and wished them good riddance and stormed backstage. I like this if it is a... I was going to say a metamorphosis, but it doesn't have to even be a metamorphosis. Just an evolution of his character. His character has gotten stale. The one more match thing is really obnoxious. So a lot more intensity and aggression out of him tonight than we've seen in quite some time. So if this is going to give his character, no pun intended here, a little more edge, then I think that this is a good thing for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been so weak. I mean, it's just lame, you know, the repeated whining, and, you know, he's just been portrayed as just a wuss, and there's just nothing to like about it. So, you know, if he can regain any sort of edge or, you know, some new motivation, you know, to change some of the patterns in his promos, that, you know, anything to refresh what has become, you know, just one of the most overplayed angles, you know, with the one more match nonsense. I mean, I think everybody's over that by now. And at this point, it's just turning into, oh, can you just get this guy off my TV kind of heat. So, you know, I'm a fan of, you know, Christian and you know, his history, you know, and his record, you know, for what he's done in the ring is impeccable. But, you know, I just want to see something different from him, and I hope this is the start of that. Because, you know, if this is just going to be the next thing he's going to whine about every week, about, you know, wearing a neck brace and doing the whole, you know, Bob Orton thing. You know, I think that's, I don't know if that's going to be the necessary change he needs. He definitely needs to find, you know, somebody else to hate and something else to talk about, because everything he's doing up until now is just played out.
Yeah, I almost hope that he loses his conscience. That's kind of where his character goes, that he, you know, he just, he feels like he's getting screwed. He feels like he's getting screwed. And almost like Mark Henry. Mark Henry says, you know, I did the right thing for 15 years, and where did it get me? Nowhere. So now I'm going to do what I want to do. Almost that same kind of thing. A lot like the Edge character could get at times where he was just, you know, not connected to the morals of what most people would, you know, would be connected to. He was willing to be, you know, almost a Ric Flair-esque type character, though, who was more methodical, would pick spots even more than Flair did, and do things that, you know, just really shiesty. He needs some sort of reboot on his character. Not a major one. I think you can do a soft reboot on him, and this is, if that's what they're doing here, this was a big step in the right direction. We went backstage after that with the trainer checking on Daniel Bryan and AJ standing there looking very, very concerned and very, very cute. Show walked in and apologized. He got down on one knee and apologized to Daniel Bryan. Said that, you know, he said, it's all my fault. Bryan said, no, it's not. Joe said, if I was here, it wouldn't have happened. Then Bryan just kind of laid there. Then Joe got real hyped up and said, I'm going to find Mark Henry. I'm going to find him now. And really made a mean face and stormed out of the room going to look for Henry. Again, much like the first spot with Joe, I thought he did a fantastic job here. They're continuing the story of feeling guilt for what happened with Bryan, and I thought it played out well here. And both Bryan did fine, and AJ, as little as she was there to do, I mean, she was believable in the concerned role.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anything to pick on in this segment, you know, one thing that I kind of chuckled at was Big Show called Daniel Bryan Danny, like he was his little buddy, like, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't think we need some kind of buddy comedy team from those two. I mean, I think it's fine that, you know, they're friends and Show is, you know, showing us the support. But I just don't want Bryan to get thrown into that, you know, okay, little buddy, go out there and get him kind of role, because that's the last thing in the world he needs. But, you know, for what it was, they were all good performances here, you know, even if they were a little formulaic in a way.
Yeah, that buddy comedy team could be interesting. It could be fun for a while, but Bryan's already on a different trajectory now. He's on a trajectory to be a star, and I think that he needs to kind of get away from any of the silly stuff that he's done in the past, like with Derek Bateman, who comes up here in a moment, back on NXT. He's just on a different path right now, and it's time for him to play in the big league. After commercial, Ted DiBiase made his entrance. Derek Bateman was already in the ring. We had the cut-in promo. Derek and his fiance Maxine. Derek, of course, been a contestant on NXT. He was on last season's show, had to quit. Was put out early because of his knee. Came back suddenly for this season. of the season that will never end. I to the point to where I can't even read I have so much post-traumatic stress disorder from covering that show, I can't even read Kester's reports half the time anymore. But it was just introducing him to Maxine. They said that they were going to get engaged. They were the new power couple. He started to kiss her. She told him no later and walked off. And that led to our third match, Ted DiBiase defeating Derek Bateman with Maxine at 2 minutes and 42 seconds. I questioned the video thing there to give Bateman and Maxine some FaceTime when DiBiase is the guy you're obviously trying to get over here because he's the guy that wins the match. What is your basic WWE squash match? Is what played out here was, you know, sub 3 minutes. Bateman got in a couple of moves or whatever, but pretty much so it was DiBiase who ended up hitting Dream Street for the finish and the win. I just question why they spent time on Bateman when the obvious thing they were trying to do here is get DiBiase over.
Yeah, it was kind of a strange time to try to introduce people, you know, when they're just going to go out there and get their ass handed to them. And unless they're, you know, they're just trying to introduce them and keep them around as, you know, enhancement talent. I mean, just to have them, you know, kind of give them something of a storyline, like, oh, they're engaged. Okay, that's whatever character we're going to give them. Now go out there and get your ass whipped. I mean, unless that was the point, I don't see why. You know, you give him just as much face time as you gave DiBiase tonight. But, you know, other than that, it was just your typical steamroller type squash. So, I mean, it was what it was, just like so many other things tonight.
Now, I know that you are not a big fan of Ted DiBiase's babyface turn as far as him basically keeping the same gimmick when he was the heel. You know, the I come for money and whatnot. You see, he looked like a 30-year-old frat boy tonight. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about last week, it just did not fit his personality, you know. And just a couple of weeks ago, you know, he showed some fire against Cody Rhodes, and, you know, we were all, both of us were like, okay, you know, back on track, here we go. But so far, he's just fallen back into the, hey, I'm the guy who's way too happy, and I have keggers with my fans. I mean, it just doesn't seem like, you know, something that, you know, I want to dig into. You know, I don't want to see more of that. I'm just like, okay, that's who you are. I until he shows me something else, I'm not interested in Ted DiBiase.
Yeah, he's got the problem that we were concerned about with Bobby Roode on TNA when it looked like he was going to go babyface as a singles wrestler and was still doing the money gimmick. It's like, okay, your baby face is not the rich guy. That's kind of the whole point. I mean, look at what's going on in the news right now. The rich are never the popular people. So those, you know, they're never going to be portrayed as the good guys. So it's a little strange for him to continue with that music. I do think he needs some different music. It doesn't work right for the new character. And he's still just bland Ted to me. It's a shame. I still think he's got great upside and plenty of potential in the ring. I just don't know if he's ever going to get over his dry-ass charisma. To me in some ways, he's kind of taken a step back from when he was in Legacy. I mean, I remember when that group was together, I'd have been a kid that Cody Rhodes, you know, these two guys are going to be flip-flopped, that Cody Rhodes would be languishing and that Ted DiBiase was going to be the guy, but it has not played out that way at all.
Yeah, I mean, and they don't even play up the wealth as a part of his character, you know, even though he's still walking out to the, you know, I come from money theme music. You know, if you're going to transform this guy into something else, you know, I mean, you need to transform the entire package. I mean, it just seems like they're really half-assing this character. And, you know, I don't know any other way to put it, just because, you know, you have the same character, the dollar signs on his tights, and now, you know, all of a sudden he's shaking hands and kissing babies and having barbecues with his fans. I mean, we don't know who Ted DiBiase is, and until we do, I don't see any reason to invest any time in this.
We've already spent more time on DiBiase than WWE did, but just one more quick question. Are they hamstrung a little bit, though? I mean, he is Ted DiBiase, for God's sakes. He is the million-dollar man's son. He's the million-dollar baby. Are they hamstrung with him? I mean, is there any way they can really get away from the wealth thing? Fans doing some sort of really stupid, you know, I lost everything in the stock market storyline that I could care less about this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, bring in his dad for a week and, you know, or a couple of weeks and have them do some kind of blow off where he renounces his lineage or, you know, something. You know, just, it's not difficult to bring in DiBiase. He's got a legend to steal. I mean, you know, pay him for a couple of weeks and have him come in and do an interesting story with his kids. It doesn't, I mean, it seems like it's practically, you know, a storybook, so, you know, kind of writing. So, I don't know. It seems like the most obvious thing to do to me.
We went to commercial when we came back. Big Show was walking backstage. He walked up on Jinder Mahal and Tyson Kidd, who were standing there talking. They were kind of sniggering at Show. He stopped and asked them what was so funny. They said nothing. Kidd said to Henry, look, if you're looking for Henry, he's left. He's already gone completely. And Jinder said something to Big Show in Punjabi, and usually one of us gets a translation. I would definitely be interested in knowing what Jinder Mahal said there, because I have no context. A lot of times we could guess or get a rough idea probably of what was being said, but on this one there was no real context. So if you're hearing this and you speak Punjabi, please drop me an email, css3238@gmail.com. Let me know what it is that Jinder said here. But whatever it was, he finished it. Show asked him if he'd like to say it again in English. Jinder gave him a smirk and said no. Show said, I figured as much, and then knocked him the hell out. He kept his fist cocked and looked at the Tyson Kidd, who tiptoed over, knocked out Jinder, and went down the hallway. It's the Big Show. I'm really okay with this. He's the monster in the company right now. The biggest guy, the world's largest athlete, all that stuff. So I'm really okay with how this went. I hate to see Jinder kind of, you know, tossed around like this, but they've lost track of him. We've known that for weeks now. They had to use Henry to get Kali off TV again. So, I thought it was a pretty good angle. I mean, a pretty good segment, all things being equal.
Yeah, I mean, it would be what you would expect if Mark Henry and Jinder Mahal met somewhere and actually, you know, a fist fight went down. I mean, if you're going to criticize anything about that segment, it would have been the blasted knockout punch. I mean, it was just, you know, he was off his back foot, and it just, you know, he didn't even look like he threw it with any sort of effort, and, you know, Jinder sold it like he got, you know, hit with a lead pipe. So, I don't know. You know, if I was going to criticize one thing, that would be it. So, but everything else was fine.
We get a video recapping the beating by Henry on Daniel Bryan to start the show, and then Big Show made his ring entrance. He cut a promo about how he had to stay focused. He couldn't go into the show on Sunday at Survivor Series with all this rage built up in him because he would get himself disqualified. And so he carried a piece of video with him everywhere he went. He asked fans if they would play it, or asked the truck if they would play it for the fans. And it was, of course, the video of him getting put out by Mark Henry back at the Money in the Bank ladder, or Money in the Bank pay-per-view with Mark Henry. That was, I think he was the first guy. No, I guess Kane was the first guy that Henry put out. But Big Show was, that's of course, where he supposedly broke the leg with the chair there. He said that kept him focused because he was going to take away, he didn't want to get disqualified, he wanted to take away the thing that was most precious to Mark Henry, and that was the world championship. He said at that point he took his hand, he balled it up in a fist, held it up in front of the camera and said, Mark Henry, I want you to get a good look at this because it's coming for you. And then he acted like he was going to punch, you know, he threw a punch at the camera, obviously he missed. After he had thrown the punch, as he turned away, he completely lost it. He cracked up. He didn't come out on TV, but according to our live report, he laughed about it and said, yeah, that was pretty bad. But when they cut back to him on TV, he had gotten his seriousness back, and he held his hand up and was able to keep it together from there. But that was a tragic moment. I mean, the line itself was kind of corny, but I could have, you know, if he had kept his crap together and had been able to sell the line, it still would have been corny, but it wouldn't have been just the disaster that this was when he started giggling at himself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing that you can criticize the Big Show for is that, you know, even in situations where he has every, you know, where his character has every right to be, you know, really angry, you just can't, you know, bring the kind of intensity to the table that, you know, somebody who was trying to avenge a friend would, you know, would you would think would bring to the table in a typical you know, dramatic television show or movie or you know, even real life situations. So, you know, the show delivered his lines okay. You know, I mean, there wasn't any major flubs. I mean, aside from the little bit of corpsing that he did at the end there, but you know, he just didn't bring the intensity to the table that I would like from a guy who really should be, you know, invested in really kicking Mark Henry's ass at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought it was a good promo. I thought he did, like, he delivered his lines well. It was just the corpsing there at the end was very tragic. You know, he just, I don't know. He's done enough here, though, I think, to again, make this the most interesting feud that they've got going on right now. And, you know, it's a weak moment here. I have a feeling we're going to get that disqualification. I just have a feeling we're going to see this again. This is going to be the chair match at TLC. I don't have any, you know, I don't have any indication or excuse me, not indication, but I have no, you know, inside knowledge of that. It's just a gut feeling that we're going to see this one more time and that it's going to be the chair match at TLC. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm definitely looking forward, and I know you are, for that match on Sunday. Most exciting match on the Survivor Series card. Kofi Kingston made his entrance, and after commercial, Unico made his ring entrance. He came out and cut a promo at ringside entirely in Spanish. I don't speak any Spanish. The only word I even made out is Unico. Do you speak any Spanish? Have any idea what he said there?
No, I was hoping somebody would send me a translation because I've gotten some in the past, but I am nowhere near fluent in Spanish. I didn't even pick up more than a couple of words there.
Yeah, I've got nothing. As I put in my report, I homeschool. We start Spanish next year, so maybe in 2 years I'll be able to tell you what he said there. But no help tonight. Sorry. Again, if you've got a translation, feel free to send Jake or I. Would love to know what Unico said there. But our fourth match of the night, Kofi Kingston defeating Unico at 5 minutes and 2 seconds. Kofi ended up winning this one on a SOS for a pinfall victory. This was one of those matches where, you know, Unico looked good. It helped him a lot to be wrestling a guy like Kofi Kingston, who, much like Daniel Bryan, much like Dolph Ziggler, though I think those guys are better at it, Kofi is a guy that makes people look very good in the ring. He can move around quick, so they were able to do that together. They had a lot of, the move that stood out to me was something very, very simple. It was early in the match. They were running the ropes, doing one of those spots. Kofi rolled up on his back to do like the front monkey flip, and instead of, you know, taking that, Unico stopped and hit a drop kick on a Kofi who was laying on his back. It just was a very cool looking move, and it's nice to see when you have two guys who are athletic enough to pull things off like that you haven't seen before. So this, you know, this was one of those matches that, you know, it was what it was. It was a 5 minute match. You can only do so much, but I got to tell you, I wouldn't mind seeing a feud between these two guys.
Yeah, I mean, of all these, Survivor Series tag match kind of mini feuds that they've been kind of throwing on TV just as random matches to try to sell, you know, that part of the pay-per-view, I thought this was the best one. Kofi, of course, was confident, you know, as he is, you know, I wish they would do more with him, but he's kind of stuck in limbo now that his tag partner, you know, is on suspension. But, you know, Unico showed a lot here, you know, that I didn't think we got to see in his feud with Sin Cara. You know, we saw, you know, some unique offense. We saw a couple of submissions from him that I thought were you know, kind of drawn from the MMA world that were kind of fun. And, you know, despite the fact that, you know, Kofi picked up the win, I thought they gave, you know, Unico, you know, a good moment there where he got a virtual three count. And I think the refs even kind of sold it as such. I think Cole even mentioned that they thought he might have gotten screwed. So, you know, he didn't really lose anything here, and it was a lot of good action there. So, you know, I felt pretty good about both guys' performances here.
I still think he looks. I mean, he still looks like a Mexican gangbanger. He looks exactly like he was plucked out of Grand Theft Auto. Does he not?
Yeah, I mean, the window dressing is bad, but I think the core performances are good. You know, I don't know how much English he actually knows, and I know, you know, that he's definitely, you know, more so than Sin Cara, but if they're insisting on having him play, you know, this kind of stereotypical Hispanic character, he's always going to be limited by that. But you know, I think as a, you know, as a wrestler, I see a lot of promise there.
I guess our saving grace on this is that, you know, Eddie Guerrero, the late great Eddie Guerrero, did start out as Latino Heat. So let's hopefully let's keep that in mind as we go forward. We got another Ezekiel Jackson hype video. I really like Zeke. I think he's probably a very nice guy, and a lot of people say a lot of good things about him. He's been entertaining at times. He's just not. I don't know that he's worth all this effort. I don't mean that ugly in any way. I'm not trying to bash the guy. But they have tried so many times to make this guy. This is the third time I can think of that they've made the big Ezekiel Jackson is coming type entrance for him. First coming out of once ECW closed, and the last time he came out from wherever hiatus he had been on, and now this. It just doesn't ever seem to work. I'd love for him to, but I just don't know if it's going to happen at this point.
Yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot of money in Zeke Jackson as this, you know, generic kind of baby face. He's trying to play the straight and narrow, you know, kind of family man, kind of baby face thing. And I don't think it really fits him. You know, my fondest memories of Zeke Jackson was when he first kind of came out of the scene as Brian Kendrick's kind of enforcer. And, you know, he was just out there playing the silent kind of badass, you know, dropping people on their heads whenever they got in his face. And, you know, I think that worked for him. Maybe there's something that I'm not seeing that they're seeing from a creative standpoint, but I would much rather see him in that role than what they're doing now.
It's a real shame. Hopefully they've got something planned for him on this return, because I just don't know how many more chances the guy's going to get. I hope he's successful this time. At the commercial, we had the women made their ring entrance. Cole announced that it was going to be a Lumberjill match now at Survivor Series, with Beth defending the Divas Championship against Eve, a Lumberjill match, a way of getting all the women on TV at one time. Lumberjack matches themselves are kind of dumb most of the time. Lumberjill matches are to the nth degree. Their fifth match of the night, Beth Phoenix and Natalya defeating AJ and Caitlin at 2 minutes and 38 seconds. Story of this match is the finish, I guess. Beth Phoenix and Natty both look strong here. Finish on this came with AJ and Natty in the ring. Natty put her in the sharpshooter, and she leaned back so far that she was able to crank all the way back and put her own head on the mat. Yes, Natty, holding the sharpshooter, managed to wrench back far enough to put her own head on the mat. That's when AJ tapped out. Congrats to her on her flexibility. I don't think we've seen anything like that since Melina kicked herself in her own head with Beth Phoenix some time ago. But post-match, as much as we have a story here, post-match, Caitlin seemed to be wholly unimpressed with AJ and would not help her friend who was selling the attack on her back. It was what it was for the Divas match. I thought that AJ's flexibility, like I said, was pretty impressive. But outside of that, it's funny to me that Beth Phoenix has the title match on Sunday, and the person who got the most out of this match was Natty, who, granted, needed it because she's done nothing but lose for weeks and weeks, and usually twice a week now.
Yeah, I guess, AJ and Caitlin are the, the babyface team of enhancement divas. You know, they're NXT, kind of still regarded as fresh out of NXT, and they haven't really gained much notoriety outside of that. So they're the sacrificial lambs here tonight. Natty looks strong. Beth looks strong. You know, if you're going to watch this match for any particular spot, it would be that sharpshooter spot, which appeared to be at, one of those impossible angles where you kind of got to turn your head perpendicular to the TV to, really take it in. But it was brutal looking, and, congrats to Natty and AJ for making that look as good as it did. But, there really wasn't a whole lot to this entire segment other than that.
Turning your head is exactly what happened. I was like, is she really touching? Wow. It's a brutal spot. It's worth putting up that spot just for the seconds ago. That's pretty impressive looking. After the commercial, basically the whole seventh quarter hour, for all intents and purposes, was a replay of the final segment of Raw from Monday night. They cut out some of the stalling and the the pausing and waiting for the crowd to respond, but it started with the Rock's entrance and went all the way to the beatdown at the end of the heels and Rock's You Can't See Me to John Cena. You know, we talked about this at the start of the show. It is what it is. I just don't know. I felt like they could have done a better job here. To me, it's the question I've always said about replaying, big chunks of Raw on these shows is, who the hell is watching SmackDown that's not watching Raw? Surely there's not that many. I'm sure there's a handful of people. There can't be many people, especially with The Rock being on Raw, that saw SmackDown this week that did not see Raw.
Yeah, I don't really understand these replays either. I mean, there's so many other ways for you to catch, Raw. I mean, if people who miss Raw DVR it, or they catch, the replays on YouTube or Hulu or, any of those other avenues that people watch, WWE programming, I don't see the point in taking up, what was it, at least 10 minutes of this broadcast that, could have been spent on other feuds, or matches, or even video packages for that matter, to be spent on this. I suppose, the answer is going to be, well, it's The Rock, and he's going to appear on the show, and this is our major selling point, so you're just going to have to pipe down and accept that this is what's going to be here. But, it definitely does seem like a waste of time in some respects.
Yeah, I think the best thing that you said was, the truth is the best thing you said here, which is there's so much more they could do here instead of re-showing this. Everybody watching the show tonight has seen that. I understand the desire to get The Rock on, and it's it's a way to take an entire quarter off. They were able to put this up there and be like, here's our quarter, and walk away. I appreciate that, but there's just so much more they could have done here. They should have done more with Henry and Cho here, maybe. I would have even been okay with them trying to pimp Del Rio and CM Punk here, because I think that, of your big three matches, that's the one that needs the most help right now. It's the one with the least interest, easy for me to say. But they played the entire thing here, like I said, with some of the stalling cut out. The announce team ran down the entire Survivor Series card as it sits right now. I'm not sure how many matches there are, so I don't know if there's any room left for one or not, but we'll have to wait to see on Sunday for that. Randy Orton made his ring entrance after commercial. Sheamus made his ring entrance. Wade Barrett was out next. We had a video that recapped his win over Orton from last week's SmackDown. Then Cody Rhodes was out last. He did a cut-in promo. Said that Barrett asked him to please put aside his personal differences, not to let those get in the way, or personal feelings towards Randy Orton to get in the way of their job tonight in the match, to which Cody said he asked Wade, what personal feelings? And then he gave his maniacal laugh. What the hell was that all about?
Yeah, that was a weird kind of a promo there. I don't even know what to make of it. I mean, I know that Cole had mentioned something that I think Rhodes said either on WWE.com or in an earlier promo that Orton had cleansed him. In that match they had, the last man standing match or whatever it was, trying to recall, was it a street fight they had a couple weeks ago? Street fight. So, he had cleansed him, and so he had felt that he feels like he's starting anew again. It was just a weird turn for that character, and I'm not sure if they're trying to play up some kind of derangement or mental illness or what they're doing there, but it definitely was a turn of events for Cody.
Yeah, it was what the hell was that moment of the night for me, for sure. I'm not entirely sure what they're doing there. I'll be interested to see where they go with that. But our sixth and final match of the night, Randy Orton and Sheamus defeating Cody Rhodes and Wade Barrett at 10 minutes and 40 seconds. After the commercial break, we had a commercial break, 3 or 4 minutes into this. When they came back, Christian had joined the heels at ringside. He was standing on there with his boot and his neck brace and his crutch. We ended up with Sheamus getting the hot tag from Orton. He came in. Both he and Cody had gotten hot tags. He pretty much just destroyed Cody. He ended up hitting the shoulder tackle off the top rope that Cole gets so orgasmic over. Barrett ran in and Sheamus just tossed him over the top rope with his own momentum. He backed up into the corner for the bro kick, but Christian tripped him as he charged forward, tripped him when he stuck his crutch in the ring, and Sheamus stumbled over it. That didn't cause a disqualification, so the ref did start yelling at him. When Sheamus went to grab Christian, Christian hit him with the crutch, and at that point, the ref called for the bell. Sheamus staggered back. Cody was able to hit the beautiful disaster kick. He got the crutch from Christian, but when he turned around, Sheamus had recovered. He hit the bro kick. He picked up the crutch at that point when Barrett had run in. He ended up breaking the crutch on Barrett's back. While Barrett was selling that, Orton, who had been tossed from the ring after he made the hot tag to Sheamus, he pops back in the ring out of nowhere to hit the RKO. At that point, Cody gets back to his feet, and Sheamus lifts, or maybe just was dragged to his feet with Sheamus. But at any rate, Sheamus ended up hitting the Celtic Cross to leave the baby faces just standing tall and victorious and looking mighty in the ring. Christian fled the ringside area when his crutch started being used as a weapon. But he wasn't involved in any way in the finish there. I'm okay with this. I really am. I mean, it is what it is. It's what you would expect for Sheamus and Orton, and getting upset about it at this point is, you know, it's kind of the same way with Cena. I try not to get too upset about it. Sometimes it catches me, but here, this was fine. They're building for the pay-per-view. I don't know why you do this here, because you just told everybody there's no reason to tune in to see this pay off. They've already beat up these guys, even if it wasn't all five of them. But to me, the biggest confusion here is that, you know, booking 101 says that at this point the heel should go over on Sunday. However, I think we'll agree that Mark Henry will go over on Sunday. I think we'll agree that Del Rio should go over on Sunday. And I think we'll agree that Awesome Truth will probably go over, though not in any way that's really their winning. It's going to be some sort of implosion or mistake or God knows what from Cena and Rock. Maybe you disagree on this, but this is kind of how I see it. I think that you're going to get those three matches with the heels going over. So this one feels like it has to be a babyface, the babyface team that goes over. You just don't see them having Sheamus and Mason Ryan and Randy Orton lose as high as they are all three of those guys right now. And so if that's the case, why not let the heels have the moment here to lead into the pay-per-view?
Yeah, you know, that's what was so bizarre about the finish. I mean, it's this is such the typical, you know, WWE go-home babyface tag match. You know, it's frustrating for me because, you know, I guess I should expect it, but it's still, you know, they put so much effort into getting Barrett over the last couple of weeks with this clean, or, you know, relatively, in pro wrestling terms, clean victories over Sheamus and Orton. You know, it just seemed like a waste to have him, you know, eat an RKO here and you know, kind of stumble backstage. You know, it kind of delegitimizes that to a point, and you know, it kind of kills whatever Sheamus or Orton would have gained from, you know, going over him clean at the pay-per-view. So it's definitely mind-boggling. And, you know, and they also, for whatever reason, decided to kind of take a little bit off of Christian here, just because they kind of gave away that he was walking around on a gimmick crutch, because that thing kind of blew up like an exploding cigar when Sheamus put it over Barrett's back or Rhodes' back. I don't remember which one it shattered over, but man, that thing blew up in a big way. But you know, there's just, I don't know. I'd have to kind of rate this main event as unsuccessful, even though to me, you know, there was really nothing wrong with any of the action. I mean, everybody involved was crisp. You know, there was no blown spot. You know, the action was, you know, pretty good paced. I mean, it was entertaining up until, you know, the finish to me, which was, you know, just kind of a lame payoff to what could have been, you know, a good chance for these heels to kind of pick up some steam heading into Sunday.
Yeah, it was a good match, and that's what makes the finish even more questionable is, you know, you have a moment here. You can still do everything that you did with Christian cheating and Like you said, maybe try not to use the gimmick, the exploding cigar gimmick crutch next time. It did kind of fly everywhere. If it wasn't gimmick, then Wade Barrett owed Sheamus a pop in the mouth when they got backstage because he hit the hell out of him. So that thing just, I'm surprised somebody didn't lose an eye in that melee. It's very questionable. I'm really okay with the finish as a whole. And if the heels do go over on Sunday, and so what we had was booking 101, then A, I'll be interested to see what happens with the rest of the matches. But B, kudos to them for letting those guys go over big at the pay-per-view. I mean, we'll find out Sunday for sure. Jason and I will be back then because that's all we've got for SmackDown this week. How would you rate the go-home show? Before we plug out of here, how would you, rating how well they did to sell Survivor Series? I mean, well, we talked about your excitement at the beginning of the show. Here we are at the end, now that we've watched SmackDown. Grading SmackDown specifically on A to F, specifically on how it did to get, to sell Survivor Series.
Well, I mean, there were parts that I didn't like, and there were parts that I liked. So, I mean, I got to give it an average grade, probably a C plus somewhere in there. I mean, it wasn't phenomenal, but I mean, most of the show was at least geared towards Survivor Series in one way, shape, or form. So, I mean, I thought some segments were unsuccessful, but I think at least most of the show was an attempt to sell Survivor Series, so you got to give them credit for that.
Yeah, I think C-plus is where I am as well. I was thinking that before you said it. I almost want to give it a B-minus, but I just can't bring it. It wasn't good enough to really move it into that B category. But I do think that easily 90% of the show was booked with an eye on the pay-per-view. I don't feel like Raw really did that as well. They tried to do the same stuff. I don't know. Maybe it was just more successful. And as I pointed out at the beginning of the show, maybe it was just because the beginning for this show was so much better than Monday's show. But I really felt like where that one did an F job of selling Survivor Series, other than just, hey, look, it's The Rock. You're going to buy it. Screw you. I really felt like this was concerned with the matches on Survivor Series and did a decent job of at least trying to sell. I mean, I really felt like that was the purpose of this show, was to sell the pay-per-view. And we don't always get that with a go-home SmackDown. Sometimes it can be trying to sell something else. Sometimes it can just be the most bizarre thing. It's really one of the better go-home SmackDowns we've had in a long time. Usually they're very, very bad, and especially going into a Big Four pay-per-view. I know going into WrestleMania, the SmackDown is basically non-existent. But they did a good job here, I thought, of putting on a show that was at least pointing to that, and we're pointing to it now. Like I said, Jason Powell and I will be back Sunday night with double coverage. I assume that Jake and Will and Ryan Kester and maybe Mark Gessner, and depends on what Mark's schedule is this weekend, will be along with Instant One Shots after the show. Jason Powell and I will be along with that members' exclusive audio. And if you'd like to read our reports and Jake and everyone's one shot after the show, plus get a chance to listen to that audio, you got to sign up for the member side. Head over to ProWrestling.net. Look on the right-hand side of the page, the .net member sign-up page, $7.50 a month. It's to get you started, $5.50 a month if you take the annual option. Now's a good time to sign up. Good stuff coming up with Survivor Series. We'll get you all the way through the holidays as the road to WrestleMania does begin to start to take shape kind of after this pay-per-view. TLC is the next one, and I think they'll probably book through that, and then we'll begin to start to see things laying shape for going into the Royal Rumble and then the big build for WrestleMania after that. Again, Jason Town, I'll be back Sunday night. Dick, I assume you'll be along this weekend with your previews and predictions for Survivor Series?
Yep, I'll have my SmackDown editorial up tomorrow, as well as the preview and predictions before the pay-per-view on Sunday, and then the rest of the writers that aren't covering the show. I'm assuming we'll all have our instant reactions for the members exclusive after the pay-per-view is over. So plenty to do this weekend for the site. So looking forward.
Right, it is members exclusive. I forgot about the instant reactions being the one shots being members only. So definitely, if you want to read those, now's the time to get signed up. A quick point before I let you guys go. If you're listening to this on Saturday the 19th, be sure to check out my Twitter. I'm at the Shore Slant, at the Shore Slant on Twitter. Doing some fun stuff with a local indie group. We're doing our the first ever, at least I've ever heard of, Tweetamentary, where we're going to make basically a Twitter documentary. We'll be posting tweet vids all day of all of us heading towards Concord, North Carolina, and preparing for Pro Wrestling Evo's big show tomorrow night, or shooting the night of the 19th, which is Battlefield Evo. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I think it's going to be fun. We'll have probably somewhere between 4 and 6 of us that'll be posting videos, and who knows? It could be a lot of fun. It could be a hot plate of garbage, as The Rock said on Monday night, but it could be some fun. So definitely, if you get a chance, check that out as well. That should be fun. That's all the time we've got tonight. Thank you, Jay, for joining me as always. I will see you back here next Friday. And for everyone listening, we'll see you Sunday night for Survivor Series. Sign up for the .NET members page so you can check it all out ad-free, talk about it in the forum, blog about it in the blog section, and here, Jason Powell and mine, after show audio breakdown. See you guys Sunday night for Survivor Series. Everyone have a fantastic weekend, and take care.